Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Today is June the 20th. And we are on page 918. We're beginning Parshas Maaseh. Last parasha of Sefer Bamidbar. Ela Maaseh b'nei Yisrael asher yatzu me'eretz Mitzrayim letzivosam. These are the travelings, how do they call it here?
Journeys,
okay, of the b'nei Yisrael, that they left Mitzrayim letzivosam according to their hosts, or according to their legions, it says here, b'yad Moshe v'Aaron, in the hands of Moshe and Aaron. Now, Aaron had already passed away at this point. Right now, Elazar is the Kohen Gadol, but when they left Mitzrayim, Moshe and Aaron were the leaders. Vayichtov Moshe es motzaihem lemasaihem. Moshe wrote their goings out to their travels, al pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem, ve'elemasaihem lemotzaihem, and these, the following, are their travels according to their goings out. So this is a difficult pasuk, because it says Vayichtov Moshe, and Moshe wrote their travels, and then it says, and these, the following, are their travels. So first of all, we already said the very first word in the parasha is Ela, these are their travels. So this seems to be repeated. And in addition, obviously Moshe wrote it down. We're about to list all of them. There's a whole bunch of them we're about to say, 42 different places that they traveled. So obviously Moshe wrote it down. Moshe wrote the whole Torah. So what is meant by Vayichtov Moshe, and Moshe wrote? So because of this question, the Orachayim Kadosh writes that Moshe Rabbeinu was told to write the travels of the Bnei Yisrael before there even was a Torah given to the Bnei Yisrael. The Torah had not yet been given to the Jewish people when we left Mitzrayim. And even after the Torah was given, this parsha was not in the Torah when it was given to us at that moment at Har Sinai. It was only later that this parsha happened. But Hashem told Moshe when we left to record the travelings of the Bnei Yisrael. There was a separate record kept by Moshe about the travels of the Jewish people. And that's what it means to say over here. The Torah says, these are the travels of the Bnei Yisrael. And Moshe wrote them down. And the following are their travels. So what we're about to have in the Torah is the Torah's record of their travels, which is consistent with the record that Moshe Rabbeinu already had kept about their travels. That's what the Torah is saying over here. There was a separate record already kept of their travels before it was put into the Torah. So that begs the question, why did Hashem have Moshe Rabbeinu write down the travels? So when we left Mitzrayim, there was something special that happened when we left Mitzrayim, and that was something that Hashem, so to speak, noted about traveling. So what was special when we left Mitzrayim about our traveling? Hashem says in Yirmiyahu that when you left Mitzrayim, that Hashem says, Zocharti lo chesed nu'urayich avas klulo sayich. I remember the chesed of your youth, the love of when you were betrothed to me. Lechtech acharei b'amidbar, going after me into, when you went after me into the wilderness, be'eretz lo zeruah, a land that had no seed, had no planting, there was no food, and you followed me into the wilderness. So this traveling into the wilderness was something very special that we did, that Hashem took note of, so to speak, and gave us a lot of credit for, that we were willing to do that. It seems that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to write down the travels of the Bnei Yisrael even before he gave us the Torah, because this was something that was very special, that Hashem wanted us, he wanted, so to speak, to take note of it. Now, he doesn't need anybody to write it down for him to take note of it, but he wanted to show us how precious it was to him. And so he told Moshe Rabbeinu to write it down. The Sforno writes that we know this already from Parashas Bahaloscha, that when the Jews were, whenever they settled in a new place in the wilderness, they had no idea when they would have to travel again. They did not know if this settling in the wilderness, wherever it was it going to be for one day, and then the next day they would travel again? Or was it going to be for a week? Or was it going to be for a month? Or maybe a period of years? It was unclear when we would need to travel. Traveling is hard for people to do. Certainly with families, it's difficult to travel. Even their traveling, which was easier than most traveling, because they had the Adonai HaKavod, they had the clouds of glory, which made traveling easier. They didn't have to deal with bumps in the road and hills. Everything was flat and easy to walk on. They didn't have to deal with the fear of wild animals or snakes or scorpions or anything like that. Nevertheless, whenever they pitched a tent, for all they knew, they would have to take it apart the next day. Or perhaps they wouldn't have to. It was unclear. And whenever a person is settled in a place, you get into a routine. Every place that you're in, you develop a routine in that place. If you ever go away for a vacation or for any reason you travel somewhere, and let's say you go to a hotel and you're there for a week. So for that week, you develop a routine which is specific to the hotel, which has different routines than in your own home. There's the way you get from one place to another, going through the building, wherever your meals are, however you're handling your food. The routine you develop is based on where you are and how things are set up over there. Whenever the Jews would travel in the wilderness, even though, of course, things were easier than regular travel, but it wasn't that every place they went wasn't a cookie cutter replica of the last place. Wherever they were, it was a little different. And the Jews would set up camp, and wherever they set up camp, you develop a routine. You had no idea if that routine was going to be for a day, for a week, for a month, for a year. You had no idea. It could be suddenly you'd have to pack up and leave, or maybe you'd be here for a long time. That's very difficult. It's very difficult, not just in the traveling, it's very difficult to feel settled wherever you are. It's difficult to live that way, not knowing when you'd have to get up and move. And so the fact that we were willing to do it, and we did it happily and willingly, that is something that stood us well in the eyes of Hashem. And therefore, he had Moshe Rabbeinu write it down to show how special it was that we did this, that we were willing to travel at the drop of a hat. We Jews now, in Galus, in exile, so we know that we might have to travel at the drop of a hat, but because it's been so long that we've been waiting for Mashiach, and it's just taken a very long time, it's hard to maintain that focus and to say that I'm prepared to leave at any moment. But we know that a Jew has to be prepared to leave at any moment, that this is not our home, and that we ultimately are waiting to leave. So we lose sight of that in our daily lives, and it's a very, very difficult way to live, to simultaneously set up shop in the best possible way, in the most comfortable way, in the most effective way, and yet, keeping in mind, I may have to leave tomorrow. That it may, all my efforts to set things up may be just for now until tomorrow. That's a difficult way to live. And the Jews did that in the wilderness. They did that in the Midbar, and Hashem expects us really to do the same thing in our Midbar, in our Golos that we're in. It's not an easy way to live. The Jews were praised for being able, or I should say being willing, to live that way. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told to write them down. Now, there were 42 different stops in traveling through the wilderness. 42. So Rashi tells us two reasons why they're all recorded here. We're going to have all of them recorded here. It's a lot of psukim that are going to be recorded. And Rashi is going to tell us two reasons why the Torah records all of these travels. One is to show us that when we wandered the wilderness for 38 years, it wasn't quite as wandering as you think. Because there are 42 travels. 14 of them took place prior to the Meraglim, prior to the spies, prior to the decree that we would have to wander the wilderness for the balance of the 40 years. So 14 were already done. At the end of the 40 years, after we're done wandering, there are 8 more travels to get us to the doorstep of Eretz Yisrael. That's 22. 14 plus 8 is 22. So if you take 42 and subtract 22, you only have 20. So there really were only 20 travels during that 38-year span. Only 20. So still moving around 20 times in 38 years, that's a lot of times to move around by our standards. But if Hashem told them you're going to have to wander for the next 38 years, you might have expected much more wandering than that. 20 times in 38 years is a little bit more than once every 2 years. So again, that's not great, but it's certainly not terrible. It could have been over those 38 years. It could have been hundreds of travels is what it could have been. But Hashem didn't do that to us. He only made us travel 20 times during that 38 years. So that's one of the reasons why these are all written down, says Rashi. The other reason Rashi tells us is because he brings a mashal about a child who became sick and the father had to take him to a faraway place to get medical treatment. And after the medical treatment was done, then they're returning now. They're going back home. And the father, every time they make a new stop, the father is recounting to the child what happened at that stop. Remember what happened over here? Remember what happened over there? Because since it was, in the end, a successful journey, the child was healed, the father is remembering all of the ups and downs of the trip. Here was the point in time where I had to run out and get you cold water. Here was the point in time where you were feeling a little bit better. Here was the point in time where you had trouble eating. Here was the point in time where I wasn't sure you were going to make it. Right, all those ups and downs that happened in that journey, the father is recounting. So here, once we're at the doorstep of Eretz Yisrael and we're ready to go in, so in the end it was a successful journey from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. It took longer than expected, but we are there. So Hashem is now going back like that father, recounting every step of the way and what happened during those steps. Of these 42 stops that are mentioned here, many of them were already mentioned in the Chumash before. Not necessarily in a manner that would enable us to recount them so easily, but they are mentioned, many of them are mentioned before. Some of them we only find out here for the first time. So as we go through, I want to at least show you in the Chumash where some of these, or maybe as many as we can, were already recorded in the Chumash. One last point of introduction is that the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, on Daf Lamed Aleph, that's 31b, the Gemara there is discussing the rule that we know that one of the Lamed Tes Malachos, one of the 39 prohibitions of Shabbos is soser, is to dismantle or demolish. So one is not allowed to dismantle something, a building, on Shabbos. You can't build a building, you also can't dismantle the building. But we know that soser, dismantling, is only usur from the Torah. It's only prohibited according to the Torah if it is soser almanas livnos. Only if it is dismantling with intention to build. Dismantling with intention to build is considered a constructive act. The destruction, the demolishing, is considered constructive if the purpose is to build. So there is an opinion in the Gemara in Shabbos that this is only true if the intention is to build in the same place where the dismantling took place. In other words, I have a building, so I want to dismantle this building. So that's one of the melachos of Shabbos. But only if it's dismantling with intention to rebuild, because otherwise it's not a constructive act, it's a destructive act. Well, according to one opinion in the Gemara, it's only if I intend to build on the same place, on the same plot of land that the original building stood. If I dismantle the first building with intention to rebuild on the same place, then that is a constructive act. Whereas if I'm going to dismantle it here and rebuild someplace else, then the dismantling is not considered to be a constructive act. Because I don't need this spot, this space to build. Like, I'm going to build someplace else. I'm going to build a mile away. So then that's not dismantling with intention to rebuild in a constructive way, because I'm not building in the same place. That is a machlokas, is a different set of opinion. That's one of the opinions in the Gemara. So the Gemara asks the question that I have a difficulty with this, because we know that all of the laws of Shabbos are derived from the Mishkan. And we know that when they dismantled the Mishkan, it was never to rebuild it in the same place. It was always to rebuild it someplace else. It was never rebuilt on the same spot where it had been dismantled. It was always going to be built someplace else. So that would seem to imply that dismantling with intention to rebuild someplace else is a constructive act, and therefore would be included in the Lamed Tes Malachos. So how can there be an opinion that says that it's not considered to be a violation of Shabbos from the Torah, unless the rebuilding takes place in the same spot where the dismantling happened? That's not what happened with the Mishkan. So the Gemara answers and says that since it says Al Pi Hashem, as it says over here in Pasuk Beis verse 2, Al Pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem, the Gemara is actually quoting a different Pasuk that also says Al Pi Hashem. It says Al Pi Hashem regarding the Jews traveling in several places, but in Parshas Baloscha, it also says Al Pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem. So since it is by the word of Hashem, therefore it is as if the rebuilding took place in the same place that the dismantling took place. Even though they physically moved, it's as if they were in the same place. Now what does that mean? What do you mean it was as if they were in the same place? Because it says Al Pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem, therefore it says if they were in the same place. Why is that as if they were in the same place? Just because it says Al Pi Hashem. So there are a few different approaches to this. Rabbeinu Hananel writes that the reason why it's considered to be rebuilding in the same place, even though they moved, because Hashem, it says Al Pi Hashem, that's considered to be in the same place, because in theory, Hashem could have told them to rebuild in the same place. He could have announced, it's time to travel, they dismantle the Mishkan, and then Hashem says, okay, we're now going to camp right here, all over again. He could have done that. He never did that, but he could have. We were totally at the mercy of Hashem's decision to travel or to remain put. Or he could have had us dismantle the Mishkan, pack everything up, start to travel, take us in a circle right back to where we were, and have us rebuild in the same spot. He could have done that. He never did, but he could have. So since he could have done that, Therefore, the dismantling is considered to be with intention to rebuild in the same place. Because we never had intention to build anywhere. We didn't know where we were going to build. We did whatever he said. And therefore, that would be considered like rebuilding in the same place. Another way of saying that, and this is the other approach, which is very, very similar to the first approach, is that since it's always al pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem, in effect, we were always rebuilding in the same place. What place is that? The place that Hashem wanted. See, when I'm dismantling my house over here, and I'm rebuilding it over there, I used to like this place, now I like that place. So it's dismantling here, rebuilding here. That dismantling, you could tell me, is not really an act of construction. It's really an act of destruction, because I'm not doing anything with the place anymore. But that's because that's my plot of land that I'm choosing either to sell or to leave without a building on it, whatever it is. But I'm making the decisions over here. But if I'm not the one making the decision, Hashem's making the decision, I have no natural connection to this piece of land or that piece of land or that piece of land. My connection is only whatever Hashem tells me. Put it up over here, take it down, put it up over there, take it down, put it up over there. I'm completely dependent and based on whatever he says. Therefore, in effect, it really is construction on the same place where the dismantling happened. It's rebuilding in the same place where the dismantling happened. Because the place becomes irrelevant because it's all dependent on Hashem's word. And when one is completely dependent on Hashem's word, then everything is the same place. It doesn't change. Many of the Musar Svarim, many of when there are discussions made that are meant to encourage us to be better people, etc., they draw from this statement of Chazal, and they say that much of the destructive things that happen, that we do, or the things that we do that are not constructive, when we behave in a way that isn't right, or even if it's not a terrible way to behave, but it's not particularly constructive, we're just kind of, you know, coasting or doing whatever. A lot of times, the reason for that is because we're not basing our actions al pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem. If a person is living their life al pi Hashem, then everything they do is constructive. Even things that appear to be not necessarily constructive or maybe even destructive, everything ultimately is constructive if a person is functioning al pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem. This is true when a person is doing something with thought to do something to be better. I'm doing this in order to be better. I'm trying to improve or whatever it is. And this is true when a person does things which appear to be, material, physical acts rather than spiritual. Everything takes on a spiritual dimension when we are working al pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem. A person can eat. A person should eat. We have a hard time doing this, but a person can eat with intention to serve Hashem better. If I strengthen my body with the food that I eat, then I will be able to serve Hashem better. If I sleep so that I will be able to re-energize myself, I'll be able to serve Hashem better. If one has those intentions, then the eating and the sleeping are themselves spiritual constructive acts to bring about service of Hashem. Whereas if I eat because I like the food, then I'm eating for myself. I'm not eating for Hashem. That's not al pi Hashem. Even though it's true my body might be energized by the food, but my intention is not for Hashem, it's for me. And if that's what I'm doing it for, then it's not al pi Hashem, and then one can see that as a non-constructive act. I don't want to say it's necessarily destructive, but not necessarily a constructive act if my intention is for me rather than for Hashem. So the al pi Hashem, by the word of Hashem, is the difference between things being constructive or not being constructive. So now, let us read through these 42 travels, these journeys, and also let's reference back in the Chumash where we find some of them already. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam she'hakol nehyah b'ra. Pasuk Gimel verse 3. Vayisu me'Ramesses b'chodesh harishon, they traveled from Ramesses in the first month. B'chamisha asar yom l'chodesh harishon, in the 15th day of the first month. Mimacharas ha-Pesach, the day after they offered the first Pesach, the first Karban Pesach. It wasn't really a Karban because it wasn't done on an altar, but it was, they did slaughter an animal and they put the blood on the doorpost. That was called the Pesach. So the day after that, Yatsu v'nei Yisrael b'yad Ramah, the Jews went out with a raised arm, a raised hand, which means they went out with their heads held high, is really what that means. Leinei kol Mitzrayim, they did this in front of all the Egyptians. This was not done quietly. We didn't sneak out of town. We waltzed out of town. We walked out of town with our heads held high in front of the Egyptians. Umitzrayim mekabarim esa shirika Hashem b'hem kol b'chor. And the Egyptians were in the middle of burying that which the Hashem had struck down all of their firstborn. They were in shambles, the Egyptians. Uveilohehem asa Hashem shvatim, and the Egyptian deities, Hashem had enacted judgment against them. So we traveled from Ramses. Where did we go? Vayisu b'nei Yisrael me'Ramses, vayachanu v'sukkos. We traveled from Ramses, and we encamped in Sukkos. I'm going to ask you to hold the place here on page 918 and turn back to Parashas Bo on page 358. On page 358, Pasuk Lamed Zion, verse 37, Vayisu v'nei Yisrael me'Ramses Sukkosa. The Jews traveled from Ramses to Sukkos. That was the first travel. That is identical to what we have here on page 918 in Pasuk Hey in verse 5, Vayisu v'nei Sukkos. The Jews traveled from Ramses and they encamped in Sukkos. We're going to toggle back and forth. So if you can just hold 358 and turn back to 918. And let's do the next one, Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayisu v'Sukkos. And they traveled from Sukkos, vayachanu ve'esam, and they encamped at Esam, asher b'kzei hamidbar, which was on the edge of the wilderness. So they went from Sukkos to Esam. Now let's go back. We're going to go a few pages ahead from 358. We're going to go into Parshas Bishalach, the next parsha. And we're going to turn to page 366, thank you. 366. And Pasuk Chaf, verse 20. Vayisumi Sukkos. They traveled from Sukkos. Vayachanu ve'esam. And they encamped at Esam. Biktzei Hamidbar, on the edge of the wilderness. Again, almost identical to what we have here on page 918, that the Jews traveled from Sukkos to Esam, which was at the edge of the wilderness. Okay, what's next on page 918? Next on page 918, Pasuk Zion, verse 7. This is number 3. Vayisu me'esam, they traveled from Esam, vayashav api ha-chiros. And they encamped, or they dwelled, at the mouth of Chiros. Chiros means freedom. Asher al pnei Baal Tzafon, which was on the face of Baal Tzafon. Baal Tzafon was the last, the only idolatry of the Egyptians that was not destroyed during Makas Bechoros. Hashem did that in order to make the Egyptians believe that Baal Tzafon was too powerful to be destroyed. Vayachanu lifnei Migdol, and they encamped in front of Migdol. So they went from Esam, they went to this area called Piachiros, and they encamped before Migdol. So, let's turn back now, and let's turn to 368. 368 at the top of the page says, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Leimor, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, V'yashuvu, they should return, V'yachanu lifnei piachiros, they should dwell in front of the mouth of freedom, Bein Migdol uvein Hayam, between Migdol and between the sea, lifnei Baal Tzafon, before Baal Tzafon, Nichachos achanu al Hayam, facing the ocean. So there they dwelled, or they encamped, in front of Baal Tzafon, and it was before Migdol. So, that again is almost identical to what we have over here on page 918. Moving on page 918, Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Vayisu mipnei achiros, they traveled from pnei achiros, vayavru v'soch hayam hamidbara, and they traveled through the ocean to the wilderness. So, that is what we call Kriyas Yamsuf, when they traveled through the wilderness, through the sea. They did not encamp over there, they just went right through it. Vayelchu derech shloshes hamim b'midbar Esam, and they traveled 3 days in the wilderness of Esam. Vayachanu b'mara, and they encamped in Mara. So Mara is now going to be the fourth encampment of the Jewish people. So they traveled to Mara. If we turn back to Parashas Beshalach, we're now going to go past Az Yashir, after the Jews cross the sea, and they emerge on dry land, and the Pasuk says on page 380, Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22, Vayasa Moshe Susom Yamsuf. Moshe caused the Jews to travel from Yamsuf. Vayetsu Amidbar Shur. They went out to the wilderness of Shur. Vayelchu Shloshes Hamim Bamidbar. They went 3 days in the wilderness. Velo Matsu Mayim. They didn't find any water. So here it says they traveled 3 days, just like it says in Parshas Maaseh. Vayavo Marasa. And they came to Mara. So Mara is the fourth place where they camped, was Mara. Before we turn back, I want to do this backwards now. Let us look on page 382. Let's look at 382 on Pasuk Chaf Zion, verse 27, on 382. Where did they go from Mara? Vayavo Elima. They came to Elim. Visham shtemesrei enos mayim v'shivim tmarim, and there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. Vayachanu sham al hamayim, and they encamped there on the water. That would be at Elim. So Elim should be our next stop. That's what we should be up to. So let's go back now to page 918. Let's look at pasuk tes, verse 9. Vayisu mimara, they traveled from Mara, vayavo Elima, and they came to Elim. Works out perfectly. Uve Elim shtemesreinos mayim v'shivim tmarim. And in Elim, there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. Vayachanu sham, and they dwell there. So, we have now everything until this point is recorded perfectly in the earlier part of the Chumash Parshios, Bo and Beshalach. Now we will have a slight departure, which means, as I mentioned to you, that in Parshas Maaseh, there are travels that have not been mentioned before in the Chumash. So here we're about to have that. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Vayisume Elim, Vayachanu al Yam Suf. They traveled from Elim, and they encamped on Yam Suf. So there's a place called Yam Suf. Now Yam Suf, we know they went through the Yam Suf, but evidently they're still hugging the coast, and they came to Yam Suf. Vayisumi Yam Suf, Vayachanu b'Midbar Sin. And then they traveled from Yam Suf, and they encamped in Midbar Sin. That's Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. So here, if we hold the place and go back to page 382, we skip one over here. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, in Perek Tezayin, chapter 16. Vayisume Elim, they traveled from Elim, Vayavo'u Kolanas, Benisol El Midbar Sin. And they came, the whole Jewish people, to Midbar Sin, Asher Ben Elim Ubein Sinai. So they came to Midbar Sin. So the Torah skips one of their places where they encamped in Parashas Beshalach. We pick it up here in Parashas Maaseh. We learn about an extra stop that is not recorded in Parashas Beshalach, which is okay. As I said, there are going to be several that are not recorded. Moving back to page 918, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Nope, sorry. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Vayisumi Midbar Sin Vayachanu B'Dafka. They traveled from Midbar Sin. They encamped in Dafka. Vayisumi Dafka Vayachanu B'Alush. And they traveled from Dafka and they encamped in Alush. Vayisume Alush, they traveled from Alush, Vayachanu Birfidim, and they encamped in Rifidim. Velohaya Shamayim Laam Lishtos, and there was no water there for the people to drink. So, let us hold the place here and turn back to Parshas Beshalach, even though we last saw them in Midbar Sin. But the Torah here will skip a few of the encampments that are mentioned, the travels that are mentioned in Parshas Maaseh. And we'll go to page 388. All the way at the bottom of the page, beginning of Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Vayisu kol anas b'nei yisrael mimidbar sin lemaaseihem al pi Hashem. The Jews traveled from Midbar Sin according to their travels by the word of Hashem. Vayachanu birfidim, and they encamped in Rifidim. Ve'imayim lishtosam, and there was no water to drink. So the Torah here skips several. I mean, which is fine. The Torah actually says they went according to their travels. The implication is there were some places that they traveled to that are not mentioned here. And they eventually got to Rifidim, where there was no water. So in Parashas Maaseh, more of those blanks are filled in. In Rifidim, we have Moshe hitting the rock. That's where he's supposed to hit the rock, not like we had in Parashas Chukas, where he was supposed to talk to the rock, and instead he hit the rock. Here we have, he actually was supposed to hit the rock, and he did, and water came out. And then we have the battle with Amalek, which takes place in Rifidim. But then we move ahead. Let's stay back where we were before, not in Parashas Maaseh, and let's move into Parashas Yisro. And in Parashas Yisro, on page 400, we have Pasuk Beis, verse 2, in Perek Yutes, chapter 19. Vayisume Rifidim, they traveled from Rifidim. Vayavo Midbar Sinai, and they came to Har Sinai, to the wilderness of Sinai. So, let's turn back to page 918. Let's look at Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15. Vayisume Rifidim, Vayachanu B'midbar Sinai. So we went from Rifidim to Har Sinai. We were at Har Sinai for nearly a year. We got there on the Rosh Chodesh Sivan. We left on the 20th of Iyar. While we were there, we got the Torah. We built the Mishkan. It was a very, very eventful place to be. And the Torah gets us there in Parashas Yisro, and the Torah remains there, meaning there's no traveling in the Torah, from Parashas Yisro all the way to Parashas Bahaloscha. From Parashas Yisro to the end of Sefer Shmos, all of Sefer Vayikra and the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, the Jews do not travel. We're at Har Sinai for nearly a year. And finally, in Parashas Bahaloscha, we travel. And we're traveling to Eretz Yisrael. So, Here on page 920, the Torah tells us what those travels were. Pasuk Tes Zayin, verse 16. Vayisumi Midbar Sinai Vayachanu B'Kivros HaTa'ava. We traveled from Midbar Sinai and we got to Kivros HaTa'ava. Vayisumi Kivros HaTa'ava Vayachanu B'Chatzeros. And we traveled from Kivros HaTa'ava, we encamped in Chatzeros. Vayisumi Chatzeros Vayachanu B'Risma. We traveled from Chatzeros and we encamped in Risma. So here we go from Har Sinai to Kivros HaTa'ava, that's one. Then to Chatzeros, which is two, and then to Risma, which is three. So let's follow that back in Parshas, not Parshas Yisro, but in Parshas Bahaloscha, because that's when we travel from Har Sinai. So again, what are we looking for over here? We are looking for three places. We're looking for Kivros HaTa'ava, we're looking for Chatzeros, and we're looking for Risma. So, in Parshas Bahaloscha, page 786, this is just to show you that we traveled, where you see the upside down nuns, starting with Pasuk Lamed Hey, verse 35, we have the famous psukim, Vayihi bin Soa Haron Vayomer Moshe, and it was when the ark would travel, Moshe would say, Kuma Hashem v'yafutzu ayvecha v'yonusa misanecha mipanecha. These are the famous verses. We say them when we take out the Torah, but these was recording what happened when we traveled. So, we traveled, and unfortunately, we had the episode of the Jews complaining and being given slav, quail, which we ate, and people died. So, the Torah tells us on page 794, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, verse 34, Vayikra es shem hamakom ahu Kivros HaTa'ava. That place was called Kivros HaTa'ava, which means the burial of the desire. Kisham kavru es ha'am amisavim, because that's where they buried the nation that had desired. They had desired the food, the meat. So, we have, accurately, that the Jews traveled to Kivros HaTa'ava. Then, Pasuk Lamed Hey, verse 35 on page 794, Mikivros HaTa'ava Nasu Ha'am Chatzeros. From Kivros HaTa'ava, the Jews traveled to Chatzeros. Vayu b'Chatzeros, and they were in Chatzeros, and that's where you have the story of Miriam speaking the Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu and getting Tzaras. So we're so far, it's very accurate. They went to Kivros HaTa'ava, and from there to Chatzeros. Those are the first two places we needed to find, and we did. The third place we now need to find is Risma. Where did the Jews go from Chatzeros? So turn the page to this page 796. Very last pasuk in Parashas Bahaloscha, the last verse, pasuk Tezai, verse 16. Ve'achar nasu ha'am mechatzeros. Then the Jews traveled from Chatzeros after waiting for Miriam. They waited 7 days for her to recuperate. Then they traveled from Chatzeros. Ve'achanu b'midbar Paran, and they encamped at Midbar Paran. And it is from there they send the spies. They sit there until the spies come back 40 days later from spying out the land. So the name of where the spies were sent from is called Midbar Paran or Kadesh. In Parashas Maaseh, on page 920, it is called Risma. Risma is the same as Midbar Paran, is the same place that they were when they sent the spies. It is called Risma here in Parshas Maaseh. This is not a different place. This is another name for the same place. Why is it called Risma? Because the Pasuk tells us in Tehillim that one who speaks Lashon Hara, then it is like Gachalei Risamim. Gecholim means coals. Risamim means hot. hot coals. Scalding coals. When one speaks Lashon Hara, his tongue is like a scalding coal. It creates destruction wherever it goes. And so the Meraglim, the spies who spoke Lashon Hara, the place is called Risma. And it is from here on that now the Torah is going to list the places that we traveled throughout those 38 years. That until now we were traveling on the way to Eretz Yisrael, not wandering, but now in Parashas Maaseh on page 920, starting with Pasuk Yutes, verse 19, we are now going to list the places that we traveled while we were wandering. So we weren't going anywhere, we were simply wandering the wilderness. So as I mentioned to you, there are going to be 20 of them. I want to just list those 20 places. I'm going to move quickly and just pick out from each pasuk the different places where they were. So they are, starting with Pasuk Yutes, verse 19, we have Rimon Paretz, we then have Livna, then Risa, then Kelasa, then Harshafer, then Charada, then Makelos, then Tachas, then Tarach, then Miska, then Chashmona, sounds like Chashmonaim, but Chashmona, then Moseros, then Bnei Akon, then Chor HaGidgad, and then Yatvasa. And then finally, you have a few more over here, which evidently are now traveling towards Eretz Yisrael. We have Avrona, Etzion Gaver, and Midbar Tzin HiKadesh. And then Hor HaHar. So they keep moving around. Now, here, although we do not have a record of these travels earlier in the Chumash, some of these travels we have a record of later in the Chumash. Because remember that in Sefer Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu recounts some of the things that happened to us throughout our travels of the Midbar. And he actually mentions several of the places that I just read off very quickly. He will mention later on Moseros. He will mention, I'm just looking for the place over here. He will mention Moseros, which is mentioned here in Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. He will mention Bnei Ya'akan. He will mention Chor HaGidgad, Yatvasa, and Avrona. He'll mention all these places later on in Sefer Devarim. And this brings us to Pasuk Lamed Zayin, verse 37. Vayisumi Kadesh, the Jews traveled from Kadesh. Vayachanu b'Hor HaHar b'Kzei Eretz Edom. And they encamped at Hor HaHar, on the edge of the land of Edom. Vayal Aaron HaKoin al Hor HaHar al Pi Hashem Vayomas Sham. Aaron HaKoin went up to the top of Hor HaHar by the word of Hashem and died there. This is recorded in Parshas Chukas that Aaron died on Hor HaHar. However, the Torah does not give us a date for Aaron's death when it is first recorded in Parshas Chukas. Here in Parshas Maaseh, we are given a date. Bishnas Arba'im Letzeis Bnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, in the 40th year when the Jews left Egypt, Bachodesh HaChamishi Be'achad Bachodesh, in the 5th month, the first day of the month, Rosh Chodesh Av. Rosh Chodesh Av, the first day of the 9 days, is the yard site of Aaron HaKohen. It's not recorded in Parshas Chukas, but here in Parshas Maaseh it is recorded. Ve'aron ben shalosh ve'esrim u'ma'as shana b'moso b'hor ha'har. Aaron was 123 years old when he died on Hor HaHar. You know, Aaron was 3 years older than Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu dies a few months later in Adar, and he is 120 when he dies. Aaron dies, he's 123. And Pasuk Mem, verse 40, Vayishma Kanani Melech Arad, and the Kanani, the king of Arad, heard, V'yoshev Vanegev Beretz Kanani, was dwelling in the south, in the land of Canaan, Bavo B'nei So, when the Jews came. That's all that's mentioned over here. We know what actually happened is that the Melech Arad, the king of Arad, is really Amalek. And what did they hear? They heard that the clouds of glory had disappeared with Aaron's death, and therefore he attacked. And this is the second attack of Amalek, and they are again soundly defeated by the Jewish people. And now again, I'm going to use that system of just reading off the names of where they went. They went to Tsalmona, then to Punon, then to Ovos, then to Iyei Ha'avarim. Iyei Ha'avarim is mentioned in Parshas Chukas. They went to Divon Gad, then they went to Almon Divla Saima, then to Harei Ha'avarim, Lifnei Nevo, which is also mentioned in Parshas Chukas, and then they went to Arvo Smoav Al Yarden Yerecho. Let me read that whole pasuk. Pasuk Mem Ches, verse 48. Vayisume Harei Ha'avarim, they traveled from Harei Ha'avarim. Vayachanu Ba'arvo Smoav, they dwelled, they encamped in Arvo Smoav, the crossings of Moav, Al Yarden Yerecho, on the Jordan River across from the city of Yericho. That's where the Jews end up. That is where Moshe Rabbeinu is eventually going to die. And then, with the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, we will cross over. At this moment, when this is all being told to the Jewish people, Parshas Maaseh, this is taking place while the Jews are in Arvos Moav. This is where we are. This is where we got to in Parshas Chukas and remain there. After defeating Sichon and Og, we remain there until the end of the Chumash, and then Yehoshua takes us across the Jordan River. Pasuk Memtes, verse 49, Vayachanu al Hayarden mi beis ha-yishimos arav el ha-shitim, that they encamped on the Jordan River, right on the river, on the east side of the river, from beis ha-yishimos until arav ha-shitim, be'arvos Moav, in the plains of Moav. That is where the Jews were, which again, we're going to be there, we're going to park there until the end of the Chumash. And then in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, Yehoshua will take us across the Jordan River, of course, into Yericho, which is going to be the first conquest of Eretz Yisrael. We will pause, we'll stop here, and Amir Tzashem, we will continue, not next week, but in 2 weeks, that will be July 4th, Amir Tzashem will be our next class.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.